Good evening and welcome to the November 7th, 2017 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. We did have closed session this evening, but there was one item that was on the agenda that was not brought before the board, and that was item 3.02. We did have a public employee performance evaluation of the superintendent during that time. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Looks like there is. Thank you very much. We move on to item number 5.02, approval of minutes of October 12th, 2017.
I move approval of the minutes of October 12th, 2017.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I was absent.
And this with one absence.
Two.
And actually two, correct? Yes, Walt and Jim. So that would pass 5-2. Number, we are down to 5.03, which is the approval of the minutes of October 17th, 2017.
And I'll make a motion to approve those.
Mr. Buckman making the motion. We have a second. Mr. Millar is a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We were all present for that meeting. And now we're moving right on to our student representatives. Hello. Did you throw for who was going to go first tonight? Okay.
Rochambeau.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Hectic, we get slow high this week. As you all know, WASC is on campus. They're evaluating our school, I guess. So on Sunday, our ASB students came on campus and gave them tours, and they've been running around our campus. They've taken over our College Career Center and made that their home base for half of this week, I guess. So I don't know if there's any members here, but we're putting on a show for them, to put it bluntly. This week we have a canned food drive. I apologize. I really hope there's no member. I'm sorry. Oh gosh. So this week we have a canned food drive going on where students will donate canned foods and non-perishable items for our local food bank and a grassroots foundation. We also have specialty items that are related to Thanksgiving. So we'll give those to the Sloan Food Bank, and then they'll every year they provide a meal during Thanksgiving to those who need it. So we have specialty items like canned yams and marshmallows and things just for that Thanksgiving day. And then today we had an open mic on campus, and I emailed Mrs. Holmes. I emailed you a picture if you want to pull that up. But we had student and staff performances on campus during lunch, where we had burritos from Taqueria de Santa Cruz, and we had a large portion of our student body stay on campus, and Mr. Weinschenk and Mr. Ritchie performed. Oh yeah, no big deal. But Mr. Ritchie, our chemistry teacher, and Mr. Weinschenk performed, as well as students performing and singing and playing guitar, piano. Yeah, Mr. Weinschenk. Oh yeah, I saw some of you on campus today. Yeah, Mr. Weinschenk played some 8-bar blues. And Mr. Ritchie had a tribute to Tom Petty.
So does he sing 8-bar blues in Latin?
He was actually just playing the guitar. I don't know if that's
not very bluesy.
Yeah.
Popular of the Latin set.
But it was just really cool seeing how many students we actually kept on campus today. It was like a reminder of the sense of community we have on campus. It was nice to show WASC, of course, that we all value our students, and we have a bunch of diverse talents on campus. And then we also had a student congress meeting today, our second of the trimester, where students brought their concerns to ASB and admin. And then there's the picture right there.
That doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good portion of our campus. If you look on the right side, you'll see some of the admins standing there with the WASC members just praising us, I guess. So Student Congress, we basically just voiced our opinions to admin, and they try to put off as least as they can everything that we bring up to Measure D. Moving on to Powder Puff. So last week on Wednesday we had our Powder Puff game where some of the proceeds went to Santa Rosa FFA. Last student congress meeting, Greta talked about the FFA putting on a scare farm where some of the proceeds went to the Santa Rosa FFA who lost their farm and much of their land because of the fire that was going on. So we decided to donate some of the proceeds from the Powder Puff game and just combine those two. We raised, I think, around $490 for Santa Rosa FFA just from that game. And we had around 110 girls participate in the games. The freshman and sophomore game, the freshman won, and then the senior-junior game, the seniors won. So that was a lot of fun, and it was great that Santa Rosa FFA benefited from that. Last week and this week, we have a comedy going on, The Importance of Being Earnest. Their next shows are tomorrow at 7 and Thursday at 7 o'clock. If you have the chance to go, it's in the theater at 7 o'clock. I went on Thursday night. It was incredible. Our theater department, it's incredible. They do amazing things, and it's awesome to see how diverse their shows are, especially this one is more, I guess, intellectually comedic rather than just weird. Yeah, I don't know what other different kinds of comedy there are, but that was good to see. And then moving on to sports, we have so our sports teams did really well this year. Cross country, volleyball, water polo, tennis, and golf all moved on to CIF with girls cross country and golf winning league, and water polo boys and cross country boys finished third in league, tennis finished second, and volleyball finished fourth. So our sports this year are doing did very well. So, and we kind of hope to continue that trend throughout the year with our winter and spring sports. Today, actually, Isabel Carpenter, who's a senior, just verbally committed to CSU Monterey for golf. She was one of the leaders of the golf team and did well every single game. So she verbally committed today. Other than that, we won our last home football game against Templeton. That was amazing. We won in the last minute after a quick comeback from Templeton. We had a touchdown and ended up winning that game. Unfortunately, we lost to AG, but it's AG, so yeah. Anything other than that? So, yeah, other than that, it's finals week next week at Slo High. Our trimester system, as you may know, has finals three times a year, so we're just grinding out there, and then as college applications get finalized, we'll continue to move past there. So thank you very much for the opportunity, and hope you guys have a great evening.
Rotik, do you have any reports back from the FFA competitions in Indianapolis?
Yeah, so Greta, who spoke at the last meeting, she did not make it past preliminaries, but she did very well in the preliminary section. I saw her speech live, and it was amazing. But our Parley Pro team got second, and then Lily Steele and Ariana King, who had a research project, they got second as well.
And this is second in the nation?
In the nation, yes. Yes, in the nation. So we're really proud of FFA. So, yeah.
Ritik, I have a request of you.
Of course.
Would you please ask the ladies who played Powder Puff football, this is a simple question.
Of course.
What do they think of the name Powder Puff? What do they think about being calling it Powder Puff football? Just a question. That's what we called it when I was in high school. I was just kind of surprised to know that it was still being called Powder Puff football. So just maybe it's something retro. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, okay. If I may add in, like, we had this conversation at ASB a couple weeks ago before we had it, and the girls who were actually playing didn't mind it, but I don't know if – I'm not sure where the term comes from. But, yeah, I mean, I'll definitely ask them if you
– Yeah, just ask them how they think.
No problem. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Zoe.
Hi.
Hi. Oh.
So we have a busy month coming up. Well, I guess November's already here, but we have a lot going on. Last week for Halloween, we had our costume contest in the quad, which actually turned out really well. There were some funny costumes. We had some dinosaurs. We had the Dwight from Office who won I think, funniest in his category. It was actually my brother, so that was great. There was Mario and Luigi, and Napoleon and Dynamite Group. It was really fun. All the kids came out. We had seats around the stage. It was like one of the best turnouts that we've ever had for a costume contest, which is a nice feeling to have for our school. And then the week of November 13th through the 17th, we have our volleyball tournaments, and we have 18 teams signed up, which is really exciting. Just like Routique has at Slow High, we have our canned food drive going on right now, and classes, I guess, whoever provides the most food or whatever from their class, they get half off to our winter dance in December. And then we have Pennies for Patients going on. That started on October 30th and will go through November 17th. Each class got a box, and they have to fill it with pennies, and other classes can come in and put, like, bigger coins in it to mess with the other team because that will cancel out for them. And then the team that has the most pennies wins a pizza party. Yesterday we had our blood drive by the United Blood Services, which is a nonprofit community blood center. We had 19 students and staff in total have blood donated. And then we have our fall sports rally on November 17th coming up. We're going to have all the team captains from the fall sports play a game all together, and we're going to have our dance fusion team perform and kind of get the kids excited to sign up for winter sports and for the spring sports coming up. It's like an introduction and an end-of-year kind of hype for our school. And then we also, for sports, four teams made it in DCIF this year, which I think is, I don't know if that's the most that's ever happened. I know it's not happened in a while, but our Morro Bay cross-country team got in, our girls' team. Our girls' volleyball team, boys' water polo, and girls' tennis. It was really exciting for the boys. They lost by 1 point, or else they would have continued. But that was really exciting to know since we have a pool. They did really well this year. And we also won against Templeton 27-21, which was our second win and our last game ever. The boys were very excited about that, so we got our fancy little Clash of the Coast trophy to hang in the locker room. And then we also have some campus construction still going on. Our small gym is almost done being remodeled. We still have to do the gym floor, exterior doors, and then the hardware inside. But from what I've seen, it looks really nice. The asphalt's being laid on the roof, which is kind of awful to smell every day. And then our construction on the 700 hall will start next week. So they wanted me to say that all traffic heading to the back parking lot has to take the new fire road west of the pool to the location. I don't know what that has to do to concern with you guys. They just wanted me to tell you. And then we have our baseball and softball field projects coming up in early November. We're going to get new running tracks, home run fencing, mow strips, and irrigation. So that's all we have going on. Thank you.
Thank you. As always, we welcome you to stay if you'd like to stay with us, but we understand if you need to go off and do your homework. So thank you for your reports. Good night. We're moving on to item number 6.02, which is the 16-17 annual report of the Personnel Commission, presented by...
Good evening. I'd like to introduce you to Becky French, our chair, and Gail Sears, one of our Personnel Commission members, is here as well. And these guys are great, great Personnel Commissioners, and I'm going to let them deliver the annual report to you.
Wonderful.
Good evening. It's nice to be back here again. Let me know if you can't hear me. My name is Becky French, and I'm currently the chairperson of the district's Personnel Commission. And as Kristen said, I'm here to present the 16-17 annual report to the commission or of the commission. While it is an Ed Code requirement that we present this information, it's also great to have this opportunity to come here and present in front of everybody, to the board and to the public, about the Personnel Commission. And what we've accomplished over the year. So on behalf of my fellow commissioners, thank you for that opportunity. Before I touch on some of the highlights of the year, I just wanted to give a brief overview of the Personnel Commission. I know many of you have heard this before, but the PC is an independent body responsible for overseeing the merit system. And the fundamental purpose of the merit system is to ensure that the selection, promotion, and retention of classified employees is based upon merit and fitness, without favoritism or prejudice. District employees covered under the merit system are all non-certificated staff, which includes those represented by the union, such as CSEA, SEIU, and then all non-represented classified staff. So that includes classified managers as well. Let's see. There are three of us, three commissioners. One position is appointed by the board, and that's Julie Jones. The second one is appointed by the classified service, or CSEA, actually, and that's Gail Sears. And then the two commissioners then appoint the third, which is currently myself. A little fun fact is that kind of tallied up based on our experience, and the three of us have well over 50 years of public service in education. So we have a little bit of history there. All right, so the commissioners work with Kristen Newland and her wonderful staff in personnel services, and so that we are working to ensure an effective and impartial personnel management system. So we meet monthly, fourth Wednesday of each month at 3:30, and we always are encouraging people to attend whenever you would like. It's usually a pretty small group, but we have a lot of fun, and we get through a lot of things there. We work on issues related to job descriptions, classifications, updating the merit system rules. We hear appeals if needed, and there's lots of other things as listed in our report. All right, so there are just a couple of things, because I know you guys have a busy agenda. There's just a couple of things I wanted to highlight on our report. First, with regards to the activities, you'll notice that this past year there were a number of new positions allocated, as well as some new classes that were approved. And the two new positions in instructional services and adult ed, as well as new classes in buildings, building grounds, and transportation, and then a certified athletic trainer, which was interesting. So all of these things are good. You know, with the potential of the budget challenges facing the district in the coming years, I think it's really important for the district to kind of take a look at positions and classifications and make sure that we're addressing the changing needs of the district. So I bring this up because it takes an enormous amount of time, primarily of Kristen and her staff's time, of doing this research, doing analysis, bringing forward the information, and most of that falls on Beth Summers, who does a phenomenal job. So I'd like to acknowledge the personnel staff for all their hard work in that area, because it is a very time-consuming thing that they're working on there. And oftentimes there's a crunch because they want to get a recruitment started, and so they bring all this information to us. It's very thorough, and it makes our job as commissioners pretty easy to just look at it, have any quick questions, and then go ahead and approve it so that things can move along in the process. The other item I wanted to just briefly touch on are the site visits that we had this year. We had the opportunity to visit two special ed classrooms at Slo High. One was a medically fragile classroom with William Walters, the teacher, and the other was Kathy Stevenson, right? Yeah, and a moderate to severe classroom. And those were amazing to go visit. It was both informative, it was inspiring to tour those classrooms and watch the teachers and the staff in action. One reason that we wanted to go there was a lot of recruit. Every month we see the recruitment, and they're always recruiting for the paraeducators, special ed paraeducators. And, you know, if you're not paying attention and you just see these lists come every month, you wonder, why are we always recruiting? Why is it just a revolving door?
it's a tough job. And when we went in there and observed and spoke with the staff and watched them working with the students, it's eye-opening to say, okay, I get it. They've got, that's a hard job. They need some specialized skills. And so just helps us figure out and understand why those things, why it's challenging and why those positions are continually being recruited for. So that was really helpful to go there. The other thing we did was we actually got a visit, or we were on the SLO campus and got a tour of all the upcoming and ongoing work that's being done through Measure D. So when we were there, I think the new tennis courts had just gone in. We were seeing where the pool is going and went into a couple of the new math classrooms and got a great tour. So again, that's beneficial to us because when we're looking at positions or when we're talking with the public, we have a better understanding of what's going on there rather than just having to say, oh, go ask the board or go ask someone else. We have a good understanding of what's happening there. Let's see. I think that's pretty much it that I had to say. On behalf of my fellow commissioners, I want to thank Dr. Prater and the school board members for your continued support. And also want to express our sincere appreciation to the work that Kristen Newland and her staff in personnel services does, because it really makes our job as commissioners very easy and also very enjoyable. So thank you. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mrs. Sheffer.
I would just like to know if you decided to begin working in board docs.
We have, but you know what? That's from this current year, so that's going to be presented next year.
All right. Don't want to spill the beans. All right.
But yes, we have, and okay. And we've just, I think, our second meeting, I think we've used it. So, yes, it's going well.
Good. Thank you.
Yes. Anything else? Thank you. All right.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes, thanks. Hi, Becky. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to thank the Personnel Commission. And I just want to check. So my understanding is that not every district in the state of California has one, and I'm
correct.
Thinking we're maybe one of 100 out of 1,000.
That's probably, yeah, and there's only but two in our county, correct?
Okay.
So, and, yes.
And so that makes it kind of special, and just as briefly as you can possibly, and how does that happen? How did we end up with that?
How do we end up there?
Because, you guys do great work, and it's hard work.
I believe that it was, I know for the county office, which is the other merit district, it was because the county government, schools were under county government. And so I think it has something to do with that structure. For San Luis Coastal, I'm not sure if they were also under county government at some point in time. We're talking pre-1965. So we've been a merit district since that point in time. So is the county office.
Everything I've heard is great, and evidently it works great. So thank you very much.
Mr. Unger?
So I have just a couple of things. I would point out that Becky has two kids in our school district. Are they going Laguna or San Luis High by now?
They're at SLO High.
Great. So that's one thing. And then to kind of answer your question, Mark, about personnel commissions, they were established, I believe, in the late 1930s as a reaction to nepotism and political pressure. Specifically, I think, in Los Angeles, where a new mayor came in and hundreds of classified employees were fired and the mayor's personal appointments were put in. And so to prevent that, it's sort of a I'm just lost it, but there's the equivalent in – it's like civil service for California. That's exactly what it is. And it was, I think, probably modeled on that. Yeah.
Becky, thank you so much for your presentation. And Mrs. Sears, were you going to speak to us as well?
No, I spoke to you last.
We rotate.
Certainly, I understand. Okay. So thank you very, very much. And moving on, my online program is not, oh, there we go. It's not working very well at the moment. Moving on to correspondence. We do have some items in correspondence that we need to discuss. And one is calling for the CSBA nomination. So the question that is before us.
I don't think so.
Excuse me. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. It's just Dr. Eisenjath Rogers.
Yes,
what this is just alerting the board to a future item that the board will weigh in on regarding nominations to CSBA delegate
okay.
assembly. And currently, Mr. Buckman is our representative to that. And it's just to alert you that the board will revisit this and act on it at the organization meeting in December.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Thanks
yes.
for that clarification. And then moving on to public comment. Is there anyone who would like to speak to the board this evening? Seeing no one, we will move on to business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things. One, I met with Brian Goetz, Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School. So their MOU with Bellevue actually is up July 1 of 2018. So we've begun conversations now to kind of work through that. The charter school has a new principal at Bellevue, and so Brian is kind of retiring out, but as he leaves, he's helping with the Measure D work there, as well as kind of getting this MOU established, so it's good, and we had a great meeting on Friday going through it together, and I look forward to bringing that to the board. It'll be two-phase. One will just be their charter renewal. That'll come to the board first, and then a later meeting will actually bring that MOU around, and so not a whole lot of changes because they moved to kind of being an independent charter, you know, with the last MOU, so just a few cleanup items we have to do there. So, and then lastly for me for the business update is just I want to thank Anthony Palazzo.
Yeah.
So this is Anthony's last board meeting with us as he goes to Cal Poly and four years ago. I suckered him into joining public service and out of the private industry, and lots of promises about, you know, how much better life would be, those types of things. So, and so he's staying in public service, going to Cal Poly, which is great. But Anthony has, I would really say has transformed our BG&T department. Has a lot of great things have happened over the last few years with him in leadership and just bringing real structure to the department of what we're doing and how we're doing it, and has really kind of set the ball up on the tee for whoever comes in to follow him. So thank you to Mr. Palazzo.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Palazzo. Wish you well at Cal Poly. They're very lucky to have you there. We move on to 8.02, and that's educational services update.
Great. I'm happy to report out a couple of things. First of all, elementary conferences are coming up next week, so teachers are working hard to prepare information to be able to have great conversations with teachers and families and students. Great to see a lot of kind of student-led conferences as well, where students are really participating in evaluating their learning and setting goals for next steps. So thanks for the hard work of teachers to make those productive. Also want to remind parents that our Bright Bites survey will take place during that time. So that's also a great opportunity for parents to be able to give us feedback on many things related to technology and innovation. And there will be devices available on campus. So as we have a tremendous elementary parent conference turnout, that's also a good time as they're waiting before or after conferences to fill out a quick survey. So just want to remind everyone of that. Also, big congratulations to Los Osos Middle School that was going through a long self-reflective process and had a Schools to Watch visitation, which is a national program and really endorsed by the state and Mr. Torlakson as well as model middle school programs. They weren't able to notify us yet if they received this honor, but even getting a visitation is a great step towards that. And congratulations to a staff that's really taken the time to look at their strengths and great things they have going on and looking for ways to improve for our students. So we will anxiously await to see if they receive the honor, but I do think going through the process, they really took the time to grow and to take steps as a team. So congratulations to them.
Yes, thank you. That was very exciting. And Mr. Pinkerton, we're moving on to you again at the Measure D update.
Yes, so we have a lot of Measure D things, so I'll keep it short. But two things in particular, I just want to let the board know we are meeting with the City of Morro Bay tomorrow afternoon to kind of talk about city programming and using the swimming pool, of course, is the I know everybody's chambering at the bit type of thing, but we're still trying to figure out how to clean the pool and put the covers on, and so it's we're going to get there. We're going to work together, but. The city's done a kind of a survey of constituents, Los Osos through Morro Bay, about use and things. So just for the board to know, we're going to be meeting tomorrow afternoon to hopefully set something up that will begin, my hope would be January 2018, because they'll have to, publicize it, get it out, those types of things. So we look forward to that. And then lastly, construction noise. So the board is going to hear about construction noise and stinky tar smells for roof and all those types of things. I just want the board to know our program managers are on site working directly with principals, trying to work with teachers to try to make it as manageable as possible. There's that delicate balance of keeping the job going and not incurring costs or those types of things. Yet, education still has to happen. On campus, teachers have to be able to teach kids. So working through that will be challenging, in particular at the two comprehensive high schools over the next 4 to 5 years. They are, and hopefully people will be able to see as we do the pool, the tennis courts, the old gym, the new annex building, the J wing. They'll start to see these little jewels pop up as the construction's going on. It's okay. So the rest of the campus is going to look like that, and that'll hopefully help us all get through these times. So we do bring out SIPE. So we have our workers' comp carry, kind of our health. They come and check SIPE. So whenever there's a teacher complaint about dust or the smell of tar, those types of things, then Mr. Plaza, our program managers, reach out to SIPE, and they'll either come to the site, they'll look at it, they'll check the air, they'll do whatever they have to do to ensure that our kids and teachers and everyone who comes on campus is safe. So that is an absolute thing that we are watching over at all times to make sure that, as we go through this, that people are safe. So I just want to let you know, I know you've heard this week from individual teachers, in particular C.L. Smith, but I would expect that you're going to hear from other teachers in the coming years.
Thank you. Dr. Prater, did you want to add something to that?
Jim, did you want to add to that?
No, I was just going to say that I appreciate your sensitivity to that. Yeah. And we're not telling them just, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So I appreciate that.
And I just would like to add that I want to appreciate the board. I know you've been super busy lately, but all 7 board members attended the WASC Sunday afternoon meet and greet. And it was passed along by the WASC committee and the San Luis High staff how appreciative they were that you gave up your Sunday to be here. And then yesterday afternoon, many of you came and showed up to the Schools to Watch validation meeting, which is an enormous deal. I've been down that road before, and I know how it feels when you're a staff member pouring your heart into that effort to see it supported by the school board. And for that, I just want to acknowledge you. So after that meeting, around 5:30, 6 o'clock last night, I couldn't help myself. I kept on driving down the road to check out the Morro Bay pool, just wondering, maybe I would catch something going on there. And I hit the jackpot. If you want to know what really, really makes a difference, why we do what we do, I pulled into the parking lot. It was just dark. The lights were on. And I walked up. I could not get in. My keys don't work there, apparently. So I walk up I walk up to the fence, and I put my hands like this on the fence, looking in, and there are over 60 girls water polo. Wow. In the pool, 60. Wow. Students in the pool. Yeah, John Andre, the athletic director, Andrew Silva, the head coach, and probably 4 other coaches. 60 girls in the pool working out, filling that pool up with their activity. And, of course, they let me in. Oh, I didn't even know that was – good job, Kim. So right there is just a snapshot with the lights on, the scoreboard in the background. And it just – really validated everything, all that vision, all that hard work that you guys put forward and taking the chance to get out there. And there it is. So those kids right there normally would have to fight for an 8 or 9 p.m. slot at Cuesta Pool. And there they are working out right at their school site. Parents were lined up to pick them up at the end of the practice when I left. Very cool stuff. And I just want to commend the school board for supporting this effort.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. I believe we're going to move along now to item number 9.01, which is a resolution, and Mr. Pinkerton is presenting.
Yeah, there's actually a few things that are kind of in order. We did this on purpose, so I'm going to quickly just walk the board through the resolution because Liz Moore is going to come up and give you the breadth of what we're talking about. So as you can see from the resolution itself, there are a lot of projects that Liz and our staff and Kim McGrath and her staff have been working on to put together in terms of CTE pathways. Through the last proposition that was passed, there's some bond funds that are set aside specifically for facilities for these CTE pathways. And so thanks to Anthony and Liz, who have been diligently working on this. Liz for probably the past 3 years with the CTE grant, and Anthony's jumped in this year in terms of turning these into a grant form. And so I'll come back to that because we're going to be asking the board to approve submission or allowing me and Mr. Plaza to submit grants on behalf of each one of these programs so that we can get matching funds to help with, you know, to help supplement our bond fund program that helps with not only with the facilities but also equipment purchases and just everything to make these CT programs really work. So tonight I'm asking the board to approve this resolution, which is this first step in us submitting those CTE grant applications. And again, Liz is going to come up. You can approve it now. You can wait till you hear about all of the grants. It's completely up to the board.
I'm confused. I'm a little confused. Are you asking us, this is a resolution, mm-hmm. but there are other parts to it.
So this is the resolution that has to be passed by the board
right.
to go for those CT funds.
Right.
And then Liz is going to give the talk about what all those programs are. And then okay. after that, we're going to be asking the board to approve, basically, the district to submit okay. applications
okay.
for each of those.
And that would be 10.01 and 10.02?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So this first one's just a resolution.
Okay. Do I see? Yes, Mr. I saw Mr. Millar.
Were you? Chris's suggestion, public. Chris is behind you.
Would you like to first hear from Liz, or would you like to make a motion? Oh.
Well, actually, I thought a better approach might be to hear from Liz and then
Absolutely.
Consider the, and then go ahead and approve the resolution and authorize the submission of the grants. But actually, I think Chris was trying to say, aren't we supposed to go to the public? Should we go to the public
yeah.
first? That was.
But I think
so. I will defer to the
so
president.
So the question is, are we going to go to the public? Are we
well,
going to Liz?
I would personally, I'd like to hear from Mrs. Moore at this
yes,
point,
okay.
and
okay.
then I think if
somebody
from the public has questions,
makes
we
sense.
Can that'll help them with that.
All right. Without any further ado, Liz, you're up.
Good evening, and thank you for letting me talk about career technical education. This is going to be a little bit of an update, and then I'll move on to what we're doing with the facilities grant, the matching grant. I have to see. Point at you. Oh, there we go. First of all, in working with these programs and getting the pathways in aligned and kind of communicating what is happening and which classes you need to take to be a CTE completer, we were able to come up with some stats for this year. And so this is a baseline year, and we'll be getting better each year, but it looks like at San Luis Obispo High, our goal is to get every student career and college ready. And right now, it looks like 15% of the students are completing their A through G classes and career pathway, which is great. I thought another stat that I looked through the transcripts, and 51% of the students of the graduating class took exactly five trimester courses, so 51%, five trimester courses at San Luis High would be a completer. So they took enough classes to be a completer, but maybe they just weren't sure of the order. So that is a very positive stat, I think, in thinking about how we can get more students career and college ready. It looks like 54% did meet the A through G requirements. Now you would add, of course, the 15, because those 15 had A through G as well. 18% were pathway completers, and then 25 didn't quite complete a pathway nor quite finish their A through G. But it's interesting to see that when you look through the transcripts to see the number of students that are taking CTE classes. Over 90% took at least one. So they're taking some of the classes, and maybe when they're learning more about the programs and understanding the pathway to complete, that I see us getting farther down the road with that. So Morro Bay, the same stats, 21% completed career pathway, and then also their A through G requirements. 16% just did the career, the college A through G. 38% were pathway completers. And then they had the same stat, which was interesting, in both schools, that 25% didn't quite finish the pathway nor complete their A through G requirements. And 61% at Morro Bay took at least four semesters of a CTE course, which four semesters would make you a pathway completer at Morro Bay if you did them in order. So these are great stats. The same about 90% of the students are taking at least one CTE course. And I think as we become more clear about what our pathways are, and the counselors are communicating, and the teachers and the brochures and the parents understand that the students will be able to get that number higher. Any questions on that?
I do have a question, Mrs. Moore. What do you think the obstacles are to students not taking more advantage? Is it scheduling? Is it lack of knowledge?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, making it clear to everyone what a completer is was a very basic step that we've accomplished that. And then, I think, and what's the other obstacle to completing? Sometimes it is scheduling. It's a little easier to take at Morro Bay to take four semesters in a row because it's two-year classes. So most of the classes are a year, so it's kind of checking two boxes. And the trimester, it's five, where there's a lot of opportunities actually to complete your five, so that's a benefit. And in talking to some of the counselors and the students, a lot of them didn't even know what a pathway completer was. So I think that from here on out, the numbers will grow.
Mm-hmm. Word of mouth. Did anyone else have a comment for Mr. Miller?
I'm from the... You're either college bound or you're vocational bound.
Yeah.
So, but I was very excited about this whole idea of CTE pathways and college readiness, because as we look at college student debt,
right,
a pathway to college could be career technical education.
Absolutely.
And the two are complementary. So I believe in the concept now, you have helped me understand it. Are parents realizing that my child doesn't need to just be on a college path, they could be on a career technical path as well, and opposite for other parents?
I think that that is a message that we could improve upon getting the word out. I think that parents are hearing of it, and they're hearing about the good programs, and being able to make someone career ready and college ready kind of builds an insurance for parents, because then their student is college ready. Oh, but guess what? They're also career ready. So I think having both is the best thing. Then you don't have to decide or worry that your student isn't going to make it in life if they have both options, and we can get them ready in both areas. It makes the parents feel better. But you're right. There's if you just were the student that finished a career pathway and then went into that as a vocation, that's a good road for a lot of students. But the perception is probably, I don't know.
Change those minds.
Change those minds.
Mr. Unger?
So I'm kind of curious about the difference between the A to G completers at San Luis Obispo High School and the A to G completers at Morro Bay High School versus the CTE pathway completers at the two schools. Do we have any more information about that? We may not be able to answer this today, but I'm kind of curious about, for example, of the 38% of the students that were CTE pathway completers at Morro Bay High, was there a pathway that most students took? When we talk about the pathway completers, now the A to G completers would be able to immediately go to CSU or UC. So are we seeing our CTE pathway completers, typically we would think, oh, they'll go to jobs, but I bet a lot of them wind up going to Questa, which is a great option as well. So do we have any just kind of information about that?
So that's a lot of questions. I'll start with the Questa piece. I found out that 47% of the seniors last year from San Luis High went to Questa, and I think it's in the 67% of Morro Bay High School graduating seniors went to Questa. So as far as, you know, the next step for that percentage of students, that's what's happening. You asked about Morro Bay, a popular pathway. Coincidentally, it was the one that I was doing, digital arts, but I think one reason I think people finished it without even knowing they were completing a pathway, because they could get fine art credit if they took the digital arts pathway. They could get the computer checked off with that, and then they could have a CT course elective as well. So it naturally kind of drew students in, and those classes were full. So that was, at Morro Bay, kind of a natural, and almost, I think 75% of the students actually did take at least one course in that pathway. Okay. And what else did you ask me that I didn't answer?
Well, just maybe you don't know this, but do you think the Questa promises encourage more students to go to Questa? I mean, a first year of college, that's great.
Well, and then eventually the new bill that's signed, that the governor signed, that gives us kids a year, so now they can get two. I think that's a great benefit. I think that we should publicize that. What a great way to get your education. Quest is a great school, and you can certainly transfer to a university from there. That's what I know about it.
Thanks.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Hi, Liz.
how
aware would you say the seniors are, those that when they are transferring to Quest, that there's this connection, or there's this possible connection with the courses that are offered at Questa in the kind of the CTE area?
Well, we're trying to build that awareness, and certainly the dual enrollment courses generate a transcript for the students. Sabrina comes out from Questa and sits with them and helps them get their transcript generated. So they're on the website, they see how it kind of works, so that makes them aware. We've done some CT pathway industry tours that end up at Questa, so we might visit a few businesses. The arts and media last year did a couple businesses and ended up in Questa's video broadcasting studio. So we had Morro Bay and San Luis High graduates in that studio running it and talking to all the kids. So it was kind of an exciting time. So we're trying to build that. I think that is an area of growth to get to awareness for the kids.
Great, thank you.
So we have the opportunity now to go back to our resolution, if that's of interest to... I'm sorry.
I don't have that much more.
No, I'm so sorry.
I just have a few more. So these are the stats. We were talking about getting this is just about the career technical education courses, getting them A through G approved, so then that works to be career ready and college ready. These percentages, we can get them up to 100. We're just not there yet. And this is where we are right now. So 67% of the career technical education courses are approved at San Luis High. And remembering that this is a percentage, and at San Luis High you have to do 5 different classes to get the hours to be complete, where at Morro Bay it's 4 semesters or 2 classes. So the percentages seem a bit higher, but it's kind of less, it kind of evens out. You just have to take more classes, but it's the same amount of hours. And then I just want to tell you a few highlights. We had the Just One Job Fair last spring. We had over 40 businesses come to Morro Bay High, and we brought San Luis students over, and we did it in the gym. And they interviewed the students with the idea of hiring just one student. And it was panel interviews. So, for instance, if you were the business, you had three sessions, and five students signed up with you. And, you know, say at 9, five students would come and line up, and you would ask them questions, and they'd give you their resume, and they had all been prepped. And we did that three times, and then there was some time to kind of wander around and talk to the people that you didn't get a chance to. And then these businesses agreed to hire just one. We had amazing success. Every single business said they'd come back, and most of them gave offers to two or more students. And if you click on this link, you can see some comments, just really great comments from the businesses. Can you click the OK, got it thing? Over there? Oh, there
check out how amazing this website is that Liz put together. I mean, seriously, you know, the drop down, the CT explain. There's a lot to this website.
So I'll just read Bob Kreiser's. Yes, I seem to have found too many prospects because we asked him, was it successful? I may refer some to my other builders. I enjoy meeting smart and motivated students. I told them all to follow up with email reminders of what each was hoping to be part of, and and notes about what they experienced. I'll bring one or two of them on board this summer, and I'll do this again next year. And I actually had a student or someone come help. We were moving some dirt in our yard because of the sewer, but it was one of his students. This is an aside, but and he was talking all about it. And he didn't know that I knew anything, and he was so excited and for this opportunity. And he said that he was offered, like he was when he went to college, that when he came home over the break, he could go work with for them again. So there's quite a lot of success stories from the Just One. It was really positive, and we'll be holding it again next year. Oh, I gotta go. Can you? Okay. So dual enrollment is doing well. These are the teachers that are at the table doing dual enrollment right now. Jeff Lemkuhl, Tim Fay, Donald Rapucci, Jan Fetcho, Meredith Hainer, and Katie Onerud. We're hoping to grow that number as well. Cuesta's been great at bringing the instructors to the table and having the dialogue and getting that going.
You should recognize Mr. Rapucci.
I see. Mr. Rapucci's right here.
CT credentials, this has been great. We've welcomed a few veteran teachers and some new teachers into our CT community. The veteran teachers have applied their industry experience in education classes, as well as the new teachers, and earned their designated subject credential. We have Ben Richardson. He's a chef from Novo at San Luis High. Zach Roper in Arts and Media and Entertainment at San Luis. Meredith Salio, she's married, Meredith Hainer. She has been an art teacher at Morro Bay, and we were talking a couple years ago, and she had worked on a television production right out of college for a couple years, and she applied and got it. Bryn Bellier and Kate Stevens applied their work experience, and Steve Gady's doing some amazing things with the biotechnology pathway. And then Megan Whiteson is starting a new public services with introduction to law and criminal law. So exciting things are happening with the work experience that these teachers bring, the industry experience that teachers are bringing. Any questions on that? Okay. Externships. Now, an externship is when a teacher goes out into the business world, into industry, and works. For the purpose of learning a little something. So Tim Fay this summer did some summer work at J&M Welding. He says everybody should do an externship. Megan, she went to a preschool to learn the Waldorf method. She does education courses at San Luis. Meredith Hainer we're having a trainer for the TriCaster to come in actually next week. It's a camera switching system that's really complicated, and we're getting a new model. This guy's going to come train all of us. Zach's going to come over. And then Donald Rapucci attended the OSHA training, and now he's an OSHA 10 trainer. He's also going to go down to Dos Pueblos High School. He's been a few days, but he's going to go in January again to train at the award-winning Engineering Academy so he can take full advantage of the teaching space that he's going to get to use in Measure D. And then Jeff Lemkuhl, who's always working on improving, is going to do a direct injection and air induction system diagnostics training. So those are just some highlights, but not all. And winding this up, you know that we are going to be graded on our career and college readiness, and it's sometimes when I looked at it, it was hard for me to understand, so I broke it down this way kind of so I could explain it to you. It's a score. 2 means you're college and career ready. So you would get 1 point. First of all, you need a high school diploma. You have your diploma. You could get 1 point for being a pathway completer. You could get 1 point for passing level 3 on the Smarter Balanced Summative Assessment on the ELA, or a level 2 on the mathematics. You could get 1 point for 1 semester of dual enrolling. You could get 1 point for completing courses that are A through G. You can get 2 points for passing an AP exam, 2 AP exams, and then getting some higher scores on the Smarter Balanced Summative Assessment. You can get 2 points for 2 semesters of dual enrollment, and then another 2 points for completing A through G and passing 1 AP exam. So this is our goal, to make the student's career and college ready, and these are the ways that that can happen. Any questions on that? Okay, we're at Prop 51, matching grant. These are the last 2 slides. Anthony and I have been working really hard at interviewing the teachers, the administration. Kim has helped all the students, and just pulling this information together. The applications are very detailed, but the great thing is, by gathering all this information on each of the pathways, we have a fantastic plan, very specific, that we can go forth and implement. And it's exciting. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, I just wanted to say that Liz has been huge in getting, you know, this all pulled together. The part that we do from the facility side is fairly intense and detailed, but the architects are preparing it, and getting it formatted is an effort, but she's really been doing the yeoman's task of making this happen, and the countless pages of writing that have to be done, and so kudos to Liz on that. It's really been a team effort. Right now we tapped into about $7 million in potential grants that are now written up, kind of queued up, ready to put the polish on. I think we have about 6 or 7 more million still that we've drafted, that we're working up. So the numbers are coming in really nicely in terms of what we're going to be able to go after in this first round. We may or may not get all of it. I'm optimistic we'll get at least some of it, but there will always be this will be round 5, and then there'll be round 6. So this is a $125 million round that they're going to be allocating out to the state. Round 5 is going to be $250 million, and then round 6 will be whatever's left over that kind of comes down from the first 2 rounds that doesn't get used. That'll go into that final round. But they've allocated $125 in that final round 6. So over the next probably 5 to 6 years, we're going to have the opportunity to go after all of these funds. And then as new programs pop up, we'll be able to, you know, the template's there at this point for the applications. We'll be able to go after any new programs that may come into the CTE pathways moving forward as well. So.
And we find out about the first one on February 14th?
Yes. Yes, we'll know our score and kind of where we land in the overall scoring then. And then June of 2018 is when they'll make the final, all right, here's the list of folks that are going to get the money. So February is the next kind of hurdle, and we get our initial score. So the nice thing is we've got a funding source. We've got projects that are underway. Some of them have been completed. We can reimburse ourselves through this program, and we've got a really good amount of data that we've been gathering for the past year plus, knowing that this was coming. It's just amazing. When they came out with the new forms, there was a few little things that are like, oh, there's another day's worth of work to go get those few things you wanted. So, but for the most part, we were ready for it.
Thank you for shepherding this, Mr. Palazzo.
My pleasure.
Any questions on any of it? Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Mrs. Moore. And we're going to take one step back to approve the resolution before we go
forward.
Just know,
if you don't approve this, ski season starts for me this week. Because this is what I'm doing right now.
So we are now moving backwards to resolution 5-17-18. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, we'll move on with the board.
Okay, thanks. I would be honored to approve resolution 05-17-18, which will allow us to move ahead with getting the funding for all this wonderful CTE activities.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. This is a roll call vote.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
2 more weeks till ski season. Okay.
And then we can move forward to the to authorize the submission of the Career Technical Education Grant application. Yep. Is that Mr. Palazzo?
Yeah, do you have the? Yeah, so this is kind of the second step in terms of the board authorizing staff to physically and actually apply for the state grants. We did do this about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, January of 16, for all state grants, but we wanted to be very careful and be very sure that it was specifically called out for the CTE grants, just in case there was any sort of little nuance in the regulations that no one knows about. We wanted to say, we're going for these grants, and staff is authorized to apply for them. So this allows us to, as staff, to apply for these grants on behalf of the board.
Is there anyone? Oh, are there questions from the board first? No. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, we'll go to the board. Mrs. Sheffer?
I would make a motion that the board authorize submission of Career Technical Education Grant application.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously.
Okay. Thank you.
That was
it. You guys are my last board meeting item ever, so it's been an honor. I do appreciate all your support and the opportunity to be here, and it has been bittersweet for me. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for what you've accomplished. We are moving on to item number 10.03. Hello, Mrs.
Hello.
Jones.
Oh. Well, while you're figuring that out, I'll introduce myself. My name is Diana Jones, and I am the elementary teacher on special assignment for English Language Arts. And so I'm here tonight to give you an update on our reading program. So tonight we're going to talk about three specific areas of work being done as part of our comprehensive literacy program. But before I dive into that, I would be remiss if I didn't start off by showing you this picture. And this is some of our sixth graders at Bishop's Peak a couple weeks ago. And I'm going to talk to you tonight about some very explicit and purposeful academic instruction that we're doing to grow readers. But I also wanted to start with this to point out that not only are we making sure that our students know how to decode and sound out words and comprehend what they're reading, to find information, to analyze it and combine it, we're growing the love of reading as well, right? You can see that these two boys are coming together and building community and having relationships over what they're reading. So this is a large part of our work as well. Our teachers are taking on the work of building readers who love to read and will continue to do that, as well as giving them the skills that they need. So I wanted to start with that this evening. So we're going to talk about these three areas tonight. And the first one that I'm going to dive into is that we're in the second year of implementation of our reading units of study. And so if you recall back to last year, which was our first year of implementation in this program, we really focused district-wide on becoming really good at mini lessons. And those mini lessons are about 10 to 12 minutes of direct instruction for the whole class. And these are skills and strategies that are appropriate for that age level, that match the progression of learning how to read and match our Common Core standards. So that's about 10 minutes of instruction. Now, our reading block is around 45 to 60 minutes. So during the rest of that reading block, we know that readers become better readers by reading. So we're giving them their skills and strategies, and then we're giving them time to practice and to dig in and to work in partnerships or small groups or to independently apply their new knowledge. So during that time, teachers are very methodically going around and conferring and working in small groups. And that's what we're focusing on this year, is becoming really good at going around and finding students, meeting with them on a regular basis, listening to them read, complementing something that they're doing well on, finding a teaching point that we can kind of connect to what they're doing well on and push them to their next level of reading, and then giving them that time to practice it. So that could be done one-on-one, or it could be done in small group if there's a group of students who need that. So really that individual coaching to meet our readers where they are and help them grow to that next level. Next year, you'll see, I just put it on here, we're really going to be looking at our assessments and making sure that our assessments are giving us the highest leverage information to help guide our instruction. So, as you go around and you do your board walks and you have the opportunity to be in classrooms during Reader's Workshop, you'll see readers in small groups. You'll see them scattered across the room, working with teachers on word work, figuring out how to make words or doing higher level thinking. You'll see them working in their readers' notebooks or filling out sticky notes galore, talking with their partners, doing all sorts of stuff across the classroom in that block of time. And you'll see here, a lot of writing will happen in Reader's Workshop as well, because we know that reading and writing is a reciprocal process. The second thing that I want to talk to you tonight about is the work that is happening for our LCAP student groups. And we know that we want all of our students to have access to this very rigorous instruction and curriculum that we have in our classrooms. So we're doing some very purposeful and intentional work to make sure that we're making that available to all of our students. And what this looks like a lot is me partnering with some of our specialists in the district. So I've been working a lot with Dawn Addis, who is our EL teacher on special assignment, with Jenny Appel, who's our leveled literacy specialist, with our literacy leads, to really think how we can leverage the work, the best instruction that's happening in that general ed classroom, to that intervention time that those students are getting as well. So that looks like things, you'll see Jenny here using some posters that come with our gen ed curriculum so that they're seeing the same posters, the same verbiage, the same teaching language, the same structures. So that's really a seamless way to support our learners. Another way that we are doing that is making sure that all of our students have access to Just Write books. And that means a lot of things. We know that readers need to have books that are a Just Write fit for them at their reading level so that it's accessible to them, but also challenging enough to help them get to that next level of reading and have them do that work to stretch themselves. We also know that readers learn more when they're engaged. So we want them to be excited about the books that are in their classrooms. So we're working to find books that are exciting for our kids in fiction and nonfiction. And also that, as I said, readers are going to be learning more the more they're engaged. So we're working on a project to get diverse books in our classrooms so that readers can see themselves in the text that they interact with as well. And the last little bit that I'm going to talk to you about tonight is the ongoing parent education that we have. And this is happening in several ways. And the first way that I want to talk to you about is a project that I'm working on with a group of teachers and actually spearheaded by Chelsea Smiley gave us the idea for this, where we're working on letters that tie to each of the reading units of study and writing units of study so that we can communicate with parents on an ongoing basis. So these letters are going to show a little bit of a peek into the classroom. This is instructional behaviors and things that are going on during the school day. Here's some strategies that students are working on. And here's some ways that you can help when you're reading with your child at home. So we're creating those as a teacher group right now so that they can be sent home throughout this year and future years to come. In addition to that, every school has the opportunity to have a literacy night as well. And while this is still being used as a great opportunity to build the love of literacy, to come together with families and students and read, a lot of our literacy leads are also using the opportunity to do some ongoing parent education. And so these slides here are from a literacy night at Los Ranchos in kindergarten earlier this year, where the teacher showed one of the ways that students learn how to read is by making meaning. And so you'll see a common mistake here in the meaning, right? My brother wears glasses. The student says, my brother wears grasshoppers. Does that really make sense? Does that make a meaning? If that were to happen while you're reading with your child at home, here's some sample responses that you could help your reader grow. So it's a very great opportunity to continue to build efficacy and give power to our parents as well and continue the work we're doing in the classroom. So those are the three areas I wanted to highlight for you this evening. And just as I started with a picture of our sixth graders, I wanted to end with a little clip of a video of our kindergartners. And this is just about 40 seconds. It's at Del Mar. It happened a couple weeks ago. They were finishing up their first unit, and they're really, really proud of themselves because they are readers. So you're going to see them with their posters, with their books, chanting their excitement of what they can do as readers. So let's see.
We are readers.
We can look.
We can look.
We can think.
We can think.
We can learn.
We can learn.
We can learn.
We can learn.
Wow.
What an amazing group of readers we have here.
So that's my update for you this evening. Do you have any questions?
Mrs. Jones, would you mind? These are some of your reading teachers here in the audience.
They are some of our reading
teachers.
Would
you stand so we could recognize you?
And thank you for that. Our teachers are putting in a lot of hard work to do this for our students, and our students are putting in a lot of work as well. We have really, really rigorous, rich instruction going on in our classrooms, and it does take a lot from our teachers, so thank you for acknowledging them tonight.
Thank you. It's a wonderful presentation.
Very thank you.
Uplifting. And now we will... Yes, that was not an action item. We are moving on to 10.04. Hello, Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. I wish I could tell you this was going to be quite as exciting as that reading video, but I'll do my best. Tonight's presentation, I really have three purposes for you. I'm hoping to review with you, kind of bring back the background and the key features of the California School Dashboard. I want to update you on things that have been happening with both the state and local indicators. And then I'll finish up with a timeline for the fall release of the school dashboard, which is coming up later this month. Okay. With that, as you know, and I apologize for the number of long words that have letters attached to them, but I am going to try to say all the complicated words and just make sense of it, especially for our public. So as you know, the Local Control Funding Formula, or LCFF, which was approved by the state in 2013, significantly changed how California provides resources to public schools, as well as provide parents, educators, and the community information on how our districts and how our schools are doing. We transition from what we called that sanction and punish of the previous accountability system to a system of continuous improvement. And for those of you that have been around in our schools long enough, you'll remember those program improvement letters that we used to send out even when our schools were flourishing. Those are long gone. In 2016, an evaluation rubric system was developed that includes both state and local measures. The dashboard was piloted last spring. I brought that to you and shared with you what that's going to look like. And it will officially launch in late November, in fact, the week of November 27th. Again, as a reminder, the purpose of the dashboard is to show how districts and schools are performing on the indicators included in the California Accountability System. The key features of the dashboard include that it's more than a single number. You think back to not that long ago when we would give the receive the API number. One number was the full judgment of how a school was doing. No longer that. It's what we believe, and I believe what our state believes, is that the quality education is defined by more than just a single score. This new system emphasizes equity. There's an increased focus on addressing disparities among our student groups. And finally, it supports local decision making. The dashboard provides information to support our local strategic plan and planning processes that affect our LCAP. And with that, as you may remember, California adopted 10 state priorities that now are part of our Local Control Accountability Plan, or LCAP, and must include a description of the annual goals to be achieved for all students and each student group for each of the top 8 priorities. Priority 9 and 10 are responsibilities of the County Office of Ed, so you will not find those in our LCAP plan. The challenge, though, for California has been to figure out how we're going to measure progress on each of these state priorities. You may remember this from last spring. For each of those, the eight top state priorities, we'll now measure our progress in one of two ways, with either a state indicator or a local indicator. Performance on priority number 4 through 8, you can see, are measured with state indicators. Performance on priorities 1 through 3 and 6 are measured with local indicators. Priority 6, school climate, is measured by both a state indicator and a local indicator. Okay? So first we're going to look a little bit more closely at the state indicators. Again, as a reminder from last spring, the state indicators for schools and districts receive one of 5 color-coded performance levels on the dashboard. From highest to lowest, the 5 performance levels are blue, green, yellow, orange, and red. State indicator levels are a result of 2 or more years of data showing the current status or most current status or results compared to the previous year's results. This change determines the performance level, and the California Department of Education has set the goal of green for all districts and schools to achieve. You remember our 5x5 grid, and I want you to pay attention to this closely because I'm going to quiz you on it in a minute. The 5x5 grid combines status over here on the left, up and down column, and change to make an overall determination for each indicator, providing equal rate to both status and change. And by example, think of a district with a high status for academic achievement and an increased change level, they would receive what color for their overall performance this year? High status and an increased. Very good, Mr. Unger. They would receive a green. I'm sorry I don't have a light to point right to it, but you got it.
Was it increased or significantly increased?
Increased. So therefore the green. You are absolutely correct. So you must have, just as a detail, 30 students or more in a group to receive a performance level, or 15 or more foster or homeless youth students in a group to receive a performance level, and that's for student confidentiality reasons. So there are 6 performance levels for the state. These six state indicators are based on data that is collected the same way for every district in California, and it's through the California Longitudinal Pupil Achievement Data System, or what we call CALPADS. The state indicators are academic indicator, which is for both English language arts and math, third through eighth grade. The English learner progress indicator, which is currently we use the CELT assessment, but we will be transitioning next year to the LPAC, which is the English Language Proficiency Assessment for California. So we're in sort of a state of transition with that indicator, but we will still receive a performance color. Chronic absenteeism, this is an interesting one. The State Board of Education is actually meeting tomorrow to make a recommendation on how this will be reported. So we'll know more as soon as we know it. Graduation rates. For this indicator, we'll be looking at the class of 2016 and comparing it with the average graduation rate from the classes of 2013, 14, and 15. Suspension rate. I'm happy to say that the suspension rate indicator that we'll receive in a few weeks is going to be completely up to date. So we'll receive a comparison of 16-17 suspension rate to 15-16, so it will be the most accurate. College and career readiness, the final state indicator, for this year will be a status report only, meaning we won't receive a color performance code. There'll be no color. It will be based on a four-year cohort for the graduating class of 2016. So again, that will still be a year behind. Okay? So let's move on to the local indicators. Data is not collected at the state level for the local indicators. For these priorities, we measure and report on our progress through the dashboard based on locally collected data. The local indicators include the basic conditions or services, the implementation of state academic standards, parent engagement, school climate. Local indicators are measured at the LEA or district level, not at the school level. Performance level for this is very, very different than what we just talked about for the state indicators. The performance levels for the local indicators are met, or not met for 2 years. In order to meet the standard or get a met on the local indicator, the LEA must do three things. Number one, collect performance data on each of the local indicators. Number two, report the results to the Board of Education at a regularly scheduled meeting, which I'm about to do with you. And number three, report the results to stakeholders through the dashboard. For each local indicator, the State Board of Education approved self-reflection tools for the LEA to use to collect and report that data. So I'm going to quickly review each of the four local indicators and how we earned a MET performance level. So basic services or conditions. For this one, we were required to collect data to show, again, three different things. If we have properly credentialed teachers, no misassignments or vacant teacher positions, if students have access to their own copy of standards-aligned instructional materials for use at school and at home, and if facilities meet the good repair standard. And based on data that was collected from our most recent school accountability report card, we have met this requirement. Number two, the implementation of state academic standards. We met this indicator by completing a self-reflection tool on our implementation of state academic standards with input from each of our sites. I included a copy of the survey and results in the board packet you received in Appendix A, which is also available to the public. The survey asks us to reflect on our progress and implementation of state standards, as well as where we are in professional learning, providing materials, and supporting our teachers in the transition. Our self-reflection indicates that we're doing well in implementing and sustaining work in English language arts, mathematics, science, and PE, and on our way in English language development, CTE, and health. It also indicates that we're at the research and exploration stage with history, social science standards implementation. The results of this self-reflection tool can be found in Appendix A, as I said, and have been uploaded to the dashboard. The next local indicator is parent engagement. And we met this indicator requirement with our LCAP stakeholder survey engagement process. The survey asks parents to provide feedback on our LCAP goals. Results from the survey had a direct impact on our LCAP, with specific actions around enhancing social-emotional support, providing comprehensive support to English learners, socioeconomically disadvantaged students, and foster homeless youth, our preschool program, as well as parent outreach and educational programs. I included a brief summary of the parent engagement process, key findings from the survey, and evidence of how this impacted specific actions of our LCAP in Appendix B for you. And finally, school climate. This is the one that is both a local and a state indicator. The state indicator is about suspension rates, but the local indicator was met by administering the Healthy Kids Survey and sharing the results and actions with the school board. This was done last spring, and we included again a brief summary of the results and action steps in the board packet in Appendix C. So I included this as a final kind of spot for you that with we know the fall release is coming up and it's scheduled. What they'll commit to is the week of November 27. So at the very latest, we hope by December 1st. We are expected to see a partial. In fact, we've already are getting little partial previews of some of the dashboard results, but some of it they're still making decisions about how it's going to be reported to us. So again, I mentioned the school Board of Education or the State Board of Education meeting tomorrow, and that should give us more clarification. There's also a series of webinars that are up on the CDE site to kind of give us all the latest information of this, again, transitioning system of accountability. And as I become more aware of changes and updates, I will be sure to share those with you. And I'm open for any questions that you might have.
It appears that you have answered all of our questions. Thank you, Mrs. Shields. We look forward to more. Oh, Mr. Millard does have a question.
Mrs. Shields, you made the presentation come alive for me. There was no risk of me dozing off. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Millard.
Thank you, Mrs. Shields. We look forward to hearing more next month. Dr. Prater.
Yes, during the reorganization meeting last December, the board appointed Mrs. Ellen Sheffer to the as the representative to the SLO County School Boards Association as a voting representative for the 11-member County Committee on School District Organization. And the purpose of this is to review and make of this 11-member committee is to make recommendations to the California Department of Ed on proposals to change school district boundaries. So tonight, we have a ballot that Mrs. Sheffer will then complete after the board gives her adequate direction. And within this ballot, there are three districts or three areas to consider. District 2. We have two candidates. District 4, there's only one. And then a member at large, there are two. And tonight, I am simply going to make a suggestion. After reaching out to Superintendent Scott Smith from Cayucas, I asked him who in his district did their school board select or nominate for District 2. And they selected Mr. Steve Guile. And then when reading the particular ballot summaries of each candidate, the member at large, Ms. Eileen Roach, she has a child currently attending Morro Bay High School, and they live and reside in Cayucas. So my suggestion to this board would be to consider supporting the Cayucas School Board's selection of Steve Guile for District 2 to maintain the incumbent Juan Oliveira, and then member at large to select Eileen Roach. But certainly it's up to your discretion.
Is there any discussion amongst the board on this subject?
Is there any discussion that you'd like to entertain? Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, bring it back to the board.
I would support the vote, asking Mrs. Shepherd to vote for Stephen Guile, I believe, and Ellen Roach.
Eileen
Roach, I'm sorry. And Juan Olivarria.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes 7-0. Thank you very much, Dr. Prater. And moving on to item number, which I can't read very well on my screen here, sorry. Item number, I'm pulling it over here. Sorry, I can't make it. There we go, it's got smaller now. Sorry, is that 10.06? Thank you, Mrs. Thank you, Kim. Mrs. McGrath.
You bet. So tonight I have before you one board policy on titled controversial issues. This is board policy 6144. So this has been reviewed by your board subcommittee as well as suggestions from GAMET. So you will see there in the red noted adjustments and additions suggested from GAMET, and the purples are noted from your subcommittee. So you will see within the third paragraph some adjustments and clarifications, as well as additions you will find in red. This is the first reading of this, and it's up to you whether to approve tonight or to bring it forward for a second reading.
Mr. Jones.
I like to look at these things individually. I'm going to recommend a second reading on this because there is a lot. I believe there are some substantive changes. I approve of this. I think it's great. I do, though, think that this is something we should just give a second reading to.
This is 6144.
This is the controversial issues.
Mr. Buckman, you're
yes, Chris. I want to thank you for going ahead and requesting a second reading on this. I too was going to suggest that, and I just want to point out that the public gets access to these board policies, and this one is especially one that I think is important to go to. They get access on a Friday, and sometimes it's Friday morning. It can be as late as Friday evening. They have till Tuesday to look at it. Two of those days are weekends, and I think that in the best interest of this board policy and in many of them, that it's good for us to let the public have time to look at it, especially when it's something where we had a direct activity in the district that will that influences this, and so I'm going to. Chris, was that in the form of a motion?
No.
Okay. Then if I can, I'd like to make a motion to carry this over to a second reading.
I have.
Unless there's a motion to do the opposite.
Thanks, and I'll get that one of these weeks.
No, that's fine.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. But yes, I think I agree with Mr. Unger.
So thank you, Mrs. Yes, I'm sorry,
yeah,
Mrs. Shepherd.
Mr. Unger, I would just like to clarify, you simply want to have another week to look at it. You're not providing any direction to the subcommittee or anything at this point.
That is absolutely
correct. Okay,
that's fine.
Thank you.
So, Mrs. McGrath, it sounds like we'll be bringing this back for a second reading.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the second board policy is on athletic competition. This is board policy 6145.2. Again, you will note additions as well as deletions that were suggested from GAMET, as well as additions and clarifications in purple noted from your board subcommittee. As well, I was meeting with the athletic directors from both of our comprehensive high schools this afternoon to begin looking over the AR related to this board policy, and as they looked over it, they
also felt comfortable with the direction that you were heading. The only suggestion they had was that we might want to put a note about following CIF procedures that, you know, obviously they're kind of bound by the regulations from CIF. We can for sure add that to the AR, but that was just one thing that they thought you might want to consider.
Mr. Unger,
where would you or they recommend that?
They recommended that addition at the end of the paragraph listed non-discrimination and equivalent opportunities in the athletic program, and at the end of that where it says the superintendent or designee shall ensure that equivalent athletic opportunities are provided in that sentence, they suggested that we might want to just have in parentheses or something just to say following CIF regulations or guidelines. Since I just met with them a few hours ago, I didn't have time to run that by anyone, but that was just a piece of their input that they also said perhaps we could add it to the AR instead. Up to you.
This is a first reading on this, just so for everyone's information. Mr. Quisenberry?
Well, since we're going to make that, since we're considering making that addition, and it's been recommended by the athletic directors, I think we should bring it back with that for a second reading.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. Is there a consensus on Mr. Quisenberry's suggestion?
I'm good with that.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. McGrath. We'll bring that back.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And we're moving on to Measure D, item number 10.08. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, so unfortunately, we don't have another board meeting in the month of November. So a lot of these items we really felt like we needed to bring to the board, even though we have a study session next week. So sorry that this didn't come through that process. But I think for the most part, there's a couple that I'll, you know, have to go a little bit more in depth in. But to start it off, the first one is the Baywood modernization project, and so we have some modernization dollars that are available, state matching dollars, and so this is one of the kind of second tier priority projects along with Bishop's Peak and C.L. Smith that we've kind of started and are moving along with. And so the goal, as we did with Bishop's Peak, is to really get the contractor in on early on these so that they really can be part of that planning process and working with the architect and working with our staff to make sure that we're getting the most out of them in terms of pre-construction and getting these established. So what I'm asking the board to approve tonight is that we can go out for an RFQ-RFP to select a contractor for a lease-leaseback construction delivery model for Baywood Elementary School. In particular, the items that we're looking at for Baywood, and again trying to get that state matching funds, HVAC, interior walls, roofing, I believe the list of proposed scope, ADA, accessibility, so painting, paving, so a lot of different things.
Are there any questions? Is there anyone from the audience who would like to speak to this matter? And seeing no one, bring it back to the board. Mr. Millar.
I would make a motion to authorize the Measure D lease-leaseback delivery method for RFQ-RFP number 294 for Baywood Elementary Modernization Project.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It passes 7-0. Thank you. Moving on to number 10.09.
So, yeah, the next is the board has previously – so part of our project at Morro Bay High School is the track and fields on the campus, as we heard Zoe talk about tonight. So the board has previously approved the first amendment, which was for the softball, baseball fields, warning track, those facilities. So this tonight, the amendment in front of the board tonight, is to actually do the track itself. So synthetic track, bringing the bleachers up to ADA, accessibility, drinking fountains. And so if I'm gonna have Ms. Holmes just quickly pull up a picture of kind of the scope of work that we're talking about. Ms. Holmes, if you go down to about page 8. bigger picture of it. And you can just scroll down. You should just be able to scroll down. There you go. Go down one more, or go back up, excuse me. Must be some right there. So the key areas that you'll see, and I guess I need to point, so up at the top left corner of this picture, those are that backfield, which is currently kind of the high jump, long jump, not high jump, but long jump, triple jump pits on there. That is going to become the discus area, top left. Okay, so those are the two.
Outside the track?
Yeah, outside the track. So this is on the left, outside the track. So those are going to be the discus areas. Right now, discus often is thrown. Thank you. So these are the two discus rings. So they'll throw this way, basically, for practice. You're very careful, of course, when we look at the track and that. They currently throw the discus. Yes. Yeah, this way, right over the fence. No. Currently, right now, they throw the discus on the track itself, so it's nice to have a separate facility for them to use that. Shot put is going to be down here, so two shot put areas, so they'll have competition. This is going to be the pole vault pit, excuse me, so pole vault. We're going to be doing some ADA accessibility upgrades to the bleacher systems there. You're going to have your long jump, triple jump, your high jump here. And then this will be a new synthetic track around this area. So along with those lanes. So basically really renovating it. And if Dr. Pruitt gets his wish, it's going to be a blue track.
The top is the east?
Yeah, so this is the ocean.
Okay.
Down here. So, you know, a lot of the main, I believe Mr. Zotovich back in the day made some improvements to the track itself to kind of prepare for this day of actually putting a synthetic track. For the most part, that construction is what's making it a little bit cheaper in terms of looking at the track. It's a little high because it does have that, you know, kind of the ability to add the nine lanes that we wanted to have. There is some changes that have to happen here, though. In terms of putting the new track in, making sure it meets all the CIF regulations. So that's part of the dirt work purchase, part of the things that are going into kind of this overall project that we're asking the board to approve. So the amendments, you can go back to the board doc. So questions on the track itself, track project, yeah.
I'm curious about the ADA modifications for the bleachers. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that, what that'll look like?
Mr. Palazzo is still here. I'm going to use you while I have you, Mr. Palazzo. So know that, it, you know, just as Anthony talks a little bit about it, any project now, when we do a major project modernization and we go back, we have to bring it up to code. So anything we touch on this campus now, it has to be brought up to code. So I'm going to have him explain kind of what those aspects are in this project.
Yeah, so basically... How do I make that open? There we go. So currently the bleachers on both sides just have stairs going up to them. The first row of seating is all just typical bench seating. For accessibility standards, in order to have for people in wheelchairs, specifically, thank you, we do need to have a ramp up to sort of that first level of bleachers, and then you've got to have some larger open areas with no seating in them to allow for a wheelchair and companion seats to be able to view the game. Now, typically in bleacher arrangements, that's all at that first level, but we have to make sure those folks are up above sort of the top of helmets and other, you know, viewers so that they're not looking, you know, they can actually see into the field. Luckily, our bleachers are up high enough that that's not a problem. So it was a fairly easy fix, if you will. And what we did is rather than get into a whole new bleacher system or working on the bleachers, we built out of concrete sort of an attachment to the bleachers. It doesn't actually connect. It's a standalone entity, but it's a concrete viewing deck and ramp system, which is much better. We don't have to get into the bleachers. We don't have to touch them. you know, it eliminated a bunch of headaches if we were to try to, you know, press renovate, box, you know, press box, a whole thing. Yeah. So this was a very elegant, simple, cost-effective solution that didn't trigger a whole bunch of upgrades on both sides of bleachers. Again, lending itself to really this project being coming in fairly cost-effectively for getting a huge bang for our buck.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions?
None.
So in terms of overall budget, it came, you know, in terms of our projections that we've been using, with the field project was kind of an add initially in terms of the softball baseball field and doing the work there. So, but that's been added into our overall budget projections. And so the estimate, what the track GMP came in, it was right, you know, very close in terms of what we're seeing. So just overall in terms of projects. So our goal, I believe, is to start this project
next couple weeks
to get, you know, in terms of November, December. I think they're kind of their push is to get done by the beginning of May. So they'll be working with soccer and all the, you know, track and all the different groups to utilize the field space that they have, as well as, you know, Los Osos Middle School, and, you know, in terms of kind of getting through this period.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, bring it to the board for an action. Mrs. Sheffer.
I would make a motion to approve amendment number 2 to the lease-leaseback contract with Acme Construction for the Morro Bay High School track and field.
Second. We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. Mr. Malazzo, we're going to hold on to you for another moment.
We got a few more coming around, so we'll keep them close.
Item number 10.10.
So, yeah, so this is the old gym, San Luis Obispo High School. So there's always been two phases of the old gym. One phase was kind of do some modernization work, and the second phase was a DSA portion, new restrooms, doing the ADA accessibility, so another large portion of work. First portion about $1.7 million, second portion about $1 million. Always this was about a $2.7 million project to renovate the old gym. They just finished the floor inside the old gym in terms of not painted yet, but they sanded the old floor down. And in looking at the old floor before they sanded it, I would have told you we would have had to get rid of that floor. I mean, it looks so bad. Just years and years of, you know, varnish and changing things. And it looks, I took Dr. Prater today and he saw, hey, what's this new floor we got in here? Because it looks beautiful. I mean, they sanded it all down very, very nice. So as we've gone through this first phase, though, there's been some things that have popped up in terms of, hey, why would we wait for the DSA phase for another month and a half? The workers are here. The people are here. The demo's here. We should do these now. So that's what this is tonight. That's what we're bringing forward is a list. And, Kim, if you go to the second one, the change order, it's about $178,000. Of basically phase two work that we would like to do now because it just makes sense to get it accomplished. And then when the DSA approval is done for the restrooms, we'll be coming back to the board for that kind of second phase, but these things won't be included anymore. So just kind of pushing some of those phase two projects. We have got kind of Acme's kind of given us a bid for that phase two, so again, keeping us in our budget in terms of overall where we think we're going to be and need to be. So some of the items, and again, Mr. Holcomb and myself and Anthony, we meet with Mr. Stewart, project manager there. We meet with Acme Construction. So Mr. Holcomb's gone over all of these items with Steve throughout the past, you know, month or so in terms of you know, where we got to today. I think Mr. Stewart kind of took some of the board members around the old gym kind of highlighted some of these things that needed to be accomplished as well. So the first one was basically we were going to wait to sand the floor down and to paint it and go through that. So this first one is to go ahead and do that. What that's going to do is that's going to allow us to actually allow the basketball teams to start using that for practice now. So even though we're going to finish the other two sides, we're going to be able to at least give them that middle gym space so that they can use it for practice. So that was one of the reasons why, hey, we should do this now. The second one is on the left side, which was the old boys' locker room. They actually tore the entire floor up there. And so when they tore it up, they realized, we need to make some changes in terms of the compaction and grading before we pour new concrete on that side of the old gym. Plaster patching phase two, so there's some work in terms of, I think, to bring the plaster all the way up to the ceiling was part of it. Demo replace existing wall phase two, so one of the walls that's part of the area that's going to be part of our new restrooms needed to be replaced because when they opened it up, it was rotted. There's a new T-bar phase.
That's over on
the left side, on the left front, right? And that's the ceiling panel portion of it. Good.
Just wave around.
Yeah.
So they've got to take out some T-bar that was in there so they can get up there and replace some gipboard that when they opened everything up, it was, oh, yeah, we've got to fix all that gipboard, et cetera, et cetera. So, it is one of those things. It's like a sweater. You tug at it a little bit, and if you keep tugging, the sweater eventually unravels. So you got to stop tugging the sweater somewhere. Hopefully we're done tugging.
So the third wall, why don't you go to the last two, too?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there's just adding some furring that they would be doing in the next phase, but go ahead and do it up ahead of time, kind of have it ready to go, queued up for when the next phase of the project's ready to start. And then, over on the boys' locker room side, adding some additional gipboard as well over there where there was some, holes. It is what they call a fire-rated ceiling in that space. And so there was a bunch of holes in it, some of it was missing, had been torn down in a prior somewhere along the line. So we've got to get all that back in there so we're up to current code and do that as kind of a maintenance and repair project.
I'm so glad you could keep those beautiful maple floors. They're gorgeous.
We actually don't think those had ever been sanded in their 80-plus years or whenever they were installed. I mean, they look to be the original floors. So there was a full thickness on them when they started sanding on it, and there was a lot of bad spots and things we've tried to kind of fix ourselves over the years, and they were able to stitch all of that out or get all of that out and stitch back in new flooring. It looks like it was never damaged or was never replaced by hobbyists, if you will, that were doing it on the weekends. So it looks like a brand new floor, and it will look like a new floor when they get it painted out or finished out and the lines painted on it. You'll never know that was an 80-year-old floor, possibly.
And literally new gym. Yeah. I mean, that old gym is going to, I think us being able to save that is going to be a real positive in terms of our overall program and look and kind of where we're headed. So
we didn't really do much in there. And I was taking some folks from a Paso Robles school district around who were just getting ready to start their work. It was a paint job. I mean, it was mostly tearing a bunch of stuff that had been stuck on the walls over the years, taking down some old ceiling tiles that had been stuck up there, giving it a facelift, if you will. It was mostly painting is what's really made the difference in the main portion of that gym and the exterior as well. So wait till those windows go in. That's really when it's going to pop. So
very exciting.
So we're asking the board tonight to approve these kind of phase two work early on so that we can get started, and it's just going to help us complete this project in the long run.
Is there anyone from the audience who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, come to the board.
I'll move approval of item 10.10.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by the chair. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0.
So with I believe it was last meeting or two meetings ago when the board passed the annex GMP, we had told the board at that time there were several items that we were kind of waiting for some bids on, and that once we kind of found out what those were, we were expecting the annex GMP to come down. So the first kind of major big portion of that was the dirt work site work that came back. And so since that represented such a huge savings, $242,000 in terms of the cost of construction, but when you add all the profit and general conditions and everything else to it, it actually is going to bring the GMP down about $286,000. So it was a positive thing. So, again, I wanted to bring that back to the board right now. So I'm asking the board to actually approve a deducted amount. So we're actually lowering the annex GMP by $286,000 due to those bids coming back at the lower price. We're still moving forward with trying to, and again, all of our projects Just so the board knows, we're constantly looking and working with ACME. That's part of the positive thing of finding ways, right? The J-Wing right now, we're looking at the roofing material and roofing contractors to possibly bring that price down $100,000, $150,000. You know, whenever we can, the track projects that the board just approved, looking at maybe placement of where those drinking fountains are going to be. Is there a better place that might save us some funds? So even though we're approving these, we do try to find ways throughout this program to bring costs down. This was such a big one that we wanted to, again, have the board vote on that tonight. So this is a deductive change order to the GMP in the amount of $286,000.
Is there anyone from the audience who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board.
Well, nobody else will move on.
Come on, it's $200,000.
Yeah, like
come on, jump on it.
That's a no-brainer, isn't it? Yes, we have a motion by Mr. Unger. And a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0. Good work.
They do exist, those deductive change orders, right?
Yeah, we just proved it. That's good. We're still looking at the fire rating in the hallway there, and some other items, and still working on getting the entire Measure D budget put together from our design build to contractors so that we can, you know, if there's other little things that we need to tweak now to make sure that we get every project completed, those are things that we're looking at. So the next few months are going to be really telling for us as we get those kind of final estimates and determine, hey, are we going to, you know, are we going asphalt shingle? Are we going tile? Are we, you know, what are we doing if we really need to bring things in line? So, Mr. Holcomb and the team have continued to work on those. So the last one tonight for Measure D is a notice of completion. So the board walked through the robotics room, I believe, also at the last Measure D study session. We actually got Mrs. Fecho got her beautiful storage sheds now in the back area. So. In terms of, you know, having a place to put things and keep things neat and tidy will be a positive thing as we move forward. So this was the robotics room. It was the floor in the auto shop as well as a new overhead door. What do you call for?
We added.
What was the door for Tim Fay?
Oh, for Tim Fay, yeah. Tim had a roll-up door in his shop that was...
wasn't big enough for
somebody. Well, it wasn't big enough, but it also kind of doubled as a guillotine, so to speak. So it was a huge safety issue with it. It needed to go. So we pushed that ahead a little bit. And so replaced that door, got him a little bigger opening because it was kind of the way it was chopped up, the way it was configured, it was kind of screwy. So we just got him a new door. It was made all the difference in the world for him and being able to move some of his big equipment in that he wasn't able to do.
So we're asking the board to approve a notice of completion on that project.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the audience who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, coming to the board, Mrs. Sheffer?
I would move that the board approve notice of completion for San Luis High School 300 and 400 project.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0. Thank you. Inches from a clean getaway, Mr. Filosso. And we are now moving on to a public hearing. So we are hereby opening a public hearing on the subject of a CDE waiver of certification requirement for educational interpreter. Mrs. McGrath.
Ms. Nealon wasn't feeling well, so I'm happy to bring this forward for her. She is asking for the opening of a public hearing for a waiver for an educational interpreter. I will also let you know that both CSEA and Cabinet are in support of obtaining a waiver in order to continue employment of an interpreter who has not yet reached these qualifications.
Is there anyone from the audience who would like to speak to this public hearing matter? I did. So, no one is coming forward, so... Anyone from the board? But no comments, I take it? Okay. Then we will therefore close the public hearing. Thank you very much, Mrs. McGrath. And now we are moving on to item number 12.01. Well, we're actually the action consent. So if you will be so kind as to pull the item, if you would like. We have item number 12.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 12.02, approve waiver request for educational interpreter certification requirement. 12.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 12.04, approval of warrants and payroll.
Pull.
That was Mr. Quisenberry and Mr. Millar. And 12.05, disposition of surplus property.
I would move approval of items 12.01 through 12.03 and 12.05.
Thank you.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So we approved all but 12.04.
I pulled it because I'm recusing myself because my wife works for one of the payees in the warrants and payroll.
Thank you. And Mr. Quisenberry.
And I just had a question about the American Star Trailways. I assume that's for bus transportation. I just wanted to clarify for myself, when is it that we contract with these folks as opposed to our own drivers and so forth,
so,
our own buses?
You know, for the most part, if they're now with our new field trip buses, it doesn't happen as much where in the past we would get, you know, certain teams if it was a long trip or, you know, if they were going a far distance, they would want one of the nicer charter buses. But now that we have our field trip buses, that doesn't happen as much. So it would really only happen if we didn't have drivers. So if we literally could not cover the trip because they're covering our day trip, didn't have time, maybe there's sicknesses, that would really be the only time. And Annie, actually, on this subject, just sent me a note that I think thus far this year we've saved about $12,000 in charter expenses. So it's something definitely that we're looking to, you know, move away from as much as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And with that, I will move approval of item 12. This is 4, correct?
Yes.
On the action consent agenda.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Unger, with Mr. Millar stepping aside. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We have a 6-1 abstention. And we're moving now on to the advanced agenda, reports by board members. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you for recognizing me. Let's see. I think we've all had a busy week. And so if nobody else is... Oh, other people are. Okay. So I was able to attend the WASC review today and on Sunday, and many of my fellow board members were there. I went to the Los Osos Middle School schools to watch and was able to sit in with the parent group, which was quite amazing. And they really do love their school, and they did even have some suggestions. I have been attending the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools, and this is a group that's put together to ensure LGBTQ students are feeling comfortable and included on their campuses. I was able to talk to them about the Tri-County Education Coalition and possibly doing some work with them on that. I attended the NAACP convention, as did Mr. Unger. And Chris, are you going to talk about that? Okay. And was able to go to the Del Mar Carnival. But most interesting, Saturday night I was able to go to an event at the Fremont Theater here in St. Louis that's hosted by New Times. And for the first time, they've included a youth category. And so I would just want to give a shout-out to some of our students in the district who participated and were really quite talented. Amelia Fleming, and for her second song, she brought up her younger sister, Rio. Izzy DeVore from Sacha Carlson. And Music Motive, especially I'd like to thank Music Motive for the Bucket Busters. They did an incredible job. And later learned that our attendance person over at Laguna Middle School, Julie Madsen, Julie's son Eric, the name that was on the poster and the biggest draw for this was a group called Word Sauce. and her son Eric Madsen is with that group, and slow high school graduate. He started guitar lessons here and moved on and continued to study music in college. And so quite a good showing from our school district, and it was an impressive event. Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
Well, I wanted to first of all thank Mrs. Hansen for allowing me to sort of pop in at C.L. Smith, and to just, I was real curious about the construction that's going on there, and they are working really hard there. They've got the administration building down to the bare studs, frankly. And so I really wanted to thank her. I got a chance to visit a couple of classrooms, and the truth is, it can be noisy. I think some of the noise has been mitigated because of the end of certain phases of the construction, but I know that this is something Mrs. Hansen and the rest of the staff are really concerned about, and I think they'll be paying attention to that. As Mr. Buckman mentioned, I was invited actually to go to the NAACP State Convention and talk about charter schools, which I did a couple of Fridays ago. It was a great opportunity to really share about that, and some of our concerns about the way charter schools are authorized and reauthorized. As well, we talked a lot about just the LCAP process and inviting people to become participants in their LCAP process. And then speaking of charter schools, which seems to be my life these days, a couple of Mondays ago, I actually testified in front of a state Senate panel, the State Senate Education Committee on Charter Schools, down in Los Angeles, again, sharing our belief that there needs to be a stronger authorization process, and a number of other changes that we would recommend. So that's been a very interesting experience for me. And then Dr. Prater and I last Friday were at our Professional Learning Network in Sacramento from the CCE, which is the California Committee on Educational Excellence, where we're talking about what can we do to make the LCAP process better. And what I'd like to share is that one of the things I thought that was so impressive was this meaningful statewide data collection service that I think we should strongly look at. It allows a comparison on many levels, district-to-district services, and I think it's something that we could benefit from. And then also we worked on a definition of what a board's role in the LCAP process should be. So it's been a really it's been a lot of work, but it's been really challenging. Dr. Ladd is our facilitator, which has been really fun to see Steve every so often. So been kind of a busy time, and been fun.
Thank you. And Mrs. Sheffer?
Just briefly, Don Addis of our district is teaching a class at Cal Poly this quarter, and I was attended last week to be a guest speaker to describe to her students the role of a board, and she's teaching the teacher credentialing program, and why teachers at all levels, from beginning on up, should kind of be aware of the board and what we do. And it was very interesting. They had great questions, and it was fun to be part of. That's it for me.
Thank you. And Mr. Quisenberry.
I had the opportunity to visit Del Mar as part of a board walk. It was on October the 19th, and Principal Gould was kind enough to take me through pretty much all of the different levels. So I got to watch the kind of the late birds, kindergarten, and I wanted to compliment the teachers that on every class the kids were engaged. I saw some students working with their FOSS kits. They were doing isopods, so they were observing what we used to call pill bugs, wood lice, whatever you want to call them. Anyway, it was neat to see the kids engaged in science. Also, one of the classes, I think it was a first grade class, may have been second grade, had someone, a guest speaker from the solid waste management, and they were reviewing which things went into the recycle barrel and which things went into the trash. So it was educational for me also. So anyway, one other thing. On the 25th, I met with Dave Baldwin, who is the outreach person for plumbers and pipe fitters. And, of course, he give me an update on PLAs. But out of that whole conversation, the one thing that I took away from it was LA Unified is trying to work with the various unions, which you know are looking for apprentices and so forth, and they're trying to, established a way for the students to work their way into an apprenticeship with, in this case, it was the plumbers and pipe fitters, but I think it also works with the various electrical and carpentry unions. So anyway, it was educational for me. He gave me a big binder, which at some point I will read. But anyway, I thought you should know what I've been about. Thank you.
I'm a longtime janitor at San Luis Obispo High School. Kevin Patrick Sullivan retired, and he left us with a parting poem, which I hope you'll indulge me if I share it, because how often do you have a janitor in your employ who is also the poet laureate of San Luis Obispo County? So this is what Kevin left us with. A Day's Work, it's called. Along the way, driving out to work in Los Osos, the egret sat on a fence post, fluffy white feathers tall and bright in the morning sun. Where is the black hole collapsing the center? I am used to the crow, a murderous lament, a hawk riding the wind, the egret stalking his prey, the white bird sitting still. What joy. I feel like singing. All day I feel music, my hands numb from weed whacking hour after hour. The weeds and grass fall before me. Stones and sticks bruise my legs, slap and nick my face. Driving back into Slow Town, I spy a coyote loping just inside the shoulder of the road, and I feel like singing.
That's great.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah. And I think that's the end of our meeting tonight. Thank you very much. We'll see you again.
Yeah.